Yes, indeed. Once again, here at the Reentry Connect podcast. Yes, Soldiers for Recovery. Special guest today, with Salam Hassan. Huh? Yes, all of y'all know him all over the social media, doing a lot of positive work in the communities out there in Kensington, KNA, some of the toughest parts in the world. Yes, indeed. But we're here to share a powerful story, powerful testimony, powerful thing for individuals to be enlightened. Remember, this podcast is to bring awareness. It's to bring resources. It's to empower and to enlighten and inspire other people to do things. Yeah. If we did it, you could do it as well. Without further ado, one quick shout out. Got to remember, one day at a time, shout out to Mel Wells. We appreciate it. Yes, at 215-226-7860. We say that they have the most influential and the most powerful resources and all the recovery support, reentry support, everything you need. Feel free to reach out to them. GPSTransportation.net. Reach out to them, too, if you need a great transportation company for anything you need, wheelchair accessible, party buses, whatever. Feel free to reach out to them as well. But without further ado, got to get back to the show. Here with Soldiers for Recovery, Mr. Salam Hassan. Some may say. Go ahead and introduce yourself and tell us where you're from.
Hey, man. First and foremost, man, I would like to thank you and all your support and followers for having me on your platform today. This is an honor and a blessing, man. And I really appreciate that. Myself, I'm from Philadelphia. Born and raised all my life in West Philly, but the whole Philly is my stomping grounds. I started out in West Philadelphia as a young man, growing up with eight siblings, actually, with my mom and dad, you know. So just a little brief, little bit. But as the questions come in, then I can go into more detail.
Absolutely. So tell us, now we know that you have this organization, but we know it was a life before the organization started. Now, during your upbringing, how was your upbringing and what led it for you to end up in the streets and fighting the addictions that the street brings?
Okay, so in 1986, my mom and dad divorced. They parted ways because my father was addicted to heroin and alcohol, and he was physically, emotionally, you know, abusive towards her. We wound up moving down an area of Philadelphia where they call it the bottom. And I was 6 years old. And that led to me to start, you know, running the streets because the father structure or the father disciplinary action was gone because my father was disciplined towards us. He kept us balanced. So when that got removed, we wound up moving down the bottom, actually 48th and Parrish. That's around that same area, close to down the bottom. But my mom wound up getting addicted to crack cocaine and alcohol herself, which led me to have to fend for myself and my brothers and sisters. So by the time I was 7 years old, I was already seasoned, you know, with running the streets. I didn't have no curfew. It wasn't no ass whoopings, no kind of discipline at all, you know? And I just had to survive. So that was my first introduction to the streets, about 6 years old, man. And I just had to, you know, learn the ropes of survival in the streets, man. During the 80s, this was in 86, 87.
Wow. Yeah. So you come up in the era when the crack pandemic was very... It's like it was like a pandemic all over the country.
Yeah.
That was very strong.
I grew up in the area, you know, where you know the crack. You know, those who were addicted, because those who were addicted to crack was like, you know, you'll see one person that's addicted. Because I don't like to, you know, use foul words towards them, but you used to see them carrying couches, refrigerators by themselves. You know, it wasn't no flat screen TVs. They had the real TVs, you know, the big joints. And, you know, you still had people dressing from the 70s with bell bottoms on and stuff like that. So it was a really interesting time for me, you know.
Gotcha. So going up and going through high school, and things like that. What type of things did you see, or did you have to, you know, shift your trajectory any type of way? How were things for you?
Things for me were terrible, man. You know, it was very terrible. And I'm gonna go back to like elementary school, because that's when it had the most impact in my life. You know, going to school with no clean clothes, mismatched sneakers. You know, high waters, and you know, I was the first one in the lunch line, the breakfast line, getting bullied, getting chased. I got abused a lot, verbally from, you know, my peers and teachers as well at the school. It was this one lady, her name was Miss Browner. May she rest in peace. She died of cancer almost like 10 years ago, that actually took me and my family in and like bought us uniforms and stuff like that, so that way we wouldn't get picked on. And then we became the kids with the uniforms, because, you know, back in the day, you didn't have to wear uniforms, but that was her way of protecting us. So during my elementary years, from like, you know, I want to say like third grade to fifth grade, it was very rough for me. It was very rough, man, because we didn't have food at home. Like, my mom would, you know, got like 1,300 in stamps every month, and she would go food shopping, and then, you know, so for that night, just for one night, you know, we had a ball, and we knew to like hide some food and stuff, because we knew the next morning there wasn't going to be any. That's how it was for me in elementary school. So by the time it got to middle school, I was seasoned. You know, I used to carry bags, pump gas, you know, at the gas station. I was one of those little kids at the market helping people from the neighborhood and around the neighborhood with their bags and pumping gas just to survive. And that's what helped me a lot from not diving into dumpsters, because when I was in elementary school, I had to, like, a lot of days we had to dive in the dumpster, like, later on in the month, so we can get bread and food and stuff like that to eat out of the dumpster due to my mom being addicted to drugs and alcohol. So by the time I got to middle school, it was a lot better, because me and my brother, you know, we started making some money. You know, we started carrying bags and stuff like that. So we ain't had to dive in no dumpsters no more. We was like literally taking care of my brothers and sisters. And it was eight of us. Nine of us at that time now. By the time we hit middle school.
By the time you hit middle school. So now, by any point in your life, did it cause you to go to prison because of the addictions you were facing?
Well, early on, you know, I started hanging with people that was just like me, like in middle school. So a lot of us had a lot in common. We didn't have fathers. Our mothers were on, you know, crack cocaine and alcohol. So we, by the time I got like 13, you know, I started selling drugs myself. So on top of that, my first addiction was alcohol, weed, and also stealing cars, you know. So that was like a combination. Like, I had to go steal a car, but in order to steal a car, I had to make sure that I was high or drunk. So that's when I really got involved with like drugs and alcohol. And it was solely because it was a lot of fun, honestly, number one. I ain't gonna sit and lie and say, yo, I ain't had no thumbs off, man. I had a freaking ball. You know, I had a ball, but now that I'm older, I realize I was using drugs and alcohol as a coping mechanism to my trauma of not having a father, or for diving in the dumpsters and being ashamed and embarrassed of not having the freshest clothes and everything else. So yeah, eventually I wound up getting arrested when I was 14, and I did 2.5 years up a school called Slayton Farm that's now closed down. But we was using drugs and alcohol in there. You know what I mean? The staff was bringing drugs and alcohol to us. I had a job that wasn't in the prison where I worked right across the street from Wine and Spirits. So the manager at the Burger King, I pay him a couple of dollars. You know, I was drinking Mad Dog 2020 and everything else while I was incarcerated. you know, so it really ain't stopped, you know, but the whole time I was drinking, it was just to cope that pain, man, to put that Band-Aid on it. So, yeah. But that was my first bid, but I wound up doing another year because I came home when I was about 16 and I went right back to stealing cars and everything else. Like I never stopped and wound up getting rearrested again and did about maybe a year and like 2 months. And then I came home when a week before my birthday, I came home, my 18th birthday.
Wow. So at that 18th birthday, did it stop there or did it continue before you had that life-changing experience?
No, it pretty much got worse because when I got arrested the second time, I fathered a child. I came home, the child was 6 months. So I fathered this child and I was very depressed around that time. You know, baby, my first love, she done moved on. Then I'm hearing things, this ain't my baby. And, you know, I didn't have money because I was used to, like, having money because I always was, like, hustling, too, during my addiction. So I had lost my connect. So a lot of things played a role in that, and which caused me to just drink more and more and more. And eventually I ran into my connect, and then I started making money, and I just drank and party more. Then I found out that the baby wasn't mine after taking care of the baby when I was 21, and that led me to deeper depression. And that's when I really felt into being an alcoholic. That's when I first acknowledged, okay, damn, I'm an alcoholic. So, It was terrible.
It was terrible, but wow, for you to even open up the way you are, you know, that actually gives people that hope in a way of sharing and reaching out for help to individuals. I remember that, you know, last week when you spoke at the event, the actual, and Mel Wells, the One Day at a Time event that went on with the motivational speaking, you know, you were open, you were letting people know it's okay to ask for help. It's okay to feel like, hey, look, I have an issue. I have a problem. I have an addiction. But if we keep it to ourselves, we'll never be able to overcome because for the simple fact is, we're being selfish to ourselves.
Right.
You know what I mean? So I want you to continue. At what point did it come in your life where you say, you know what? I'm tired of this. I'm going to turn my back on all the things that I used to do and start turning around, start helping individuals, you know, from the things I was delivered from.
Okay. I was about 33 years old.
Wow.
I was about 33 or 34. 34 years old, actually. What led me to that point after numerous incarcerations, numerous, you know, blackouts and hearing stories about how I was acting and behaving under alcohol. I wound up getting turned on to Percocets. I got in an accident when I was about 28 years old, and I got introduced to Percocets. And then when I got introduced to Percocets, I realized I didn't have to have a hangover anymore. I had a bright idea. I said, okay, I'm going to stop drinking because drink is the problem. It's not Percocets, right? Mm-hmm. So the bright idea was, okay, stop drinking and just take the Percocets so that way you can, you know, function. And it worked out for me for about a year. Before I knew it, I was taking about maybe 20 to 30 oxys, not oxys, 20 to 30 512s in one day. You know, I would do, my tolerance started, of course, you know, the doctor said, take it as needed. You know, I started out with about four of them a day, you know, but a month later, I'm up to like 10. Another month later, I'm up to 15. And then before you know it, people don't know because every time I tell a story, people be like, man, that's crazy. You'd have been dead. You'd have killed yourself taking all that at one time. And that's not true. I mean, for a person that's just starting it, who never had, you know, pills and you just go straight to the top and pop 10, that should have killed you. Mine's gradually went up. Mm-hmm. And before I knew it, I was doing about 30 to 40 512s in a day. So by the time I was, I want to say 29, I was on Oxy 80s by then. Oxy 80s, you know, because, and I was doing 8 of those a day.
A day.
Sometimes 10.
Powerful.
So by the time I was, I want to say 30 years old, I got introduced to heroin. I got introduced to heroin, and that's a whole nother story, you yeah. know, but I'm going to, you know, make it short. So yeah. I got introduced to heroin, and I got introduced to Kensington.
Mm-hmm.
And then that's when my life, like, you know, was already down the drain. This is me after me being homeless 3 or 4 times from alcohol. Now I'm homeless 3 or 4 times for Percocets and heroin, you know. Yeah. It was terrible, man. It was a terrible thing. And then one day I got honest, man. I got honest. A lot of us call these crocodile tears. A lot of us do it in our addiction. You know, where we ask God to, you know, forgive us and ask God, you know, I promise all these false promises. You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
And I just got honest one day. I was tired. I was beaten. You know, we had just got our house again, and I didn't want to lose it again. I didn't want to, you know, see my wife and kids homeless again as they were before, as I caused before multiple times. And I'm like, I stood up in prayer one night and I got honest. I said, God, I'm not going to stop using.
Wow. Wow.
It wasn't no more, I'm sorry, help me. And I said, God, I'm not going to stop using. And I was about 34 years old. I said, God, I'm going to kill myself, and not because I want to. It's just because I don't know how to stop, and I don't want to stop. I love heroin, but God, if you have something for me to do in life, I said, God, if I got a chance to make it to paradise, if it's something that you want me to do, please can you take this away from me? So 3 months after I made that prayer, because I kept on using. I ain't stopped.
Yeah.
But God says this, if you take one step towards him, he'll take 10 coming to you. And mind you, I was praying since I was a teenager.
Yeah.
Apologizing, you know, crying in prayer, knowing damn well I wasn't going to stop. It wasn't until I got honest with God and I said, I ain't stopping. Yes, I don't want to stop. You know, but if God had something for me, I mean, I wanted to stop, but I didn't. You know, I can't explain that. I still knew I was going to get high.
I woke up and
I put on my clothes. I was going great. Hit my wife up like I normally do for $20 so I can go up Kensington. And God set me back down. He said, not today. You're going to rehab. And it was in my spirit. He spoke to my spirit. It was like he took my head and pushed it down back on the bed, said, you're going to rehab today.
Wow.
And not only are you going to rehab, he took that burning desire to want to go use again from me.
Wow.
And I never felt that burning desire again.
Never felt it again.
Never felt it again. And ever since then, it gave birth to Soldiers for Recovery. The day I got out of rehab, they told me not to come back for 30 days to speak. I got out on a Sunday, came back the following Sunday, and I've been doing the work ever since. It gave birth to Soldiers for Recovery.
Wow. Just like that, you tapped into your higher power. You made that commitment to yourself, saying you're going to be honest. You had to face that thing.
Right.
You know what I mean? Right. A lot of times people don't want to face it and be honest with themselves, be honest with their creator, and try to say, listen, I really want to make a change.
Right.
And when it happened, they told you not to come in 30 days, but then 7 days later, you came back letting them know, this is what happened to me. This is the transformation.
Mm-hmm. And mind you, I never planned none of this. I didn't know like what everybody see. I didn't know none of this stuff, man. Mm-hmm. I didn't know, you know, I'm a barber, so naturally I'm a talker, but I didn't know I'd be talking to save lives on the level that God sees today. You know what I'm saying? Amazing. I never knew that Soldiers for Recovery would be doing the work that it's doing. And I always tell people that this is God's. Like, I don't own Soldiers for Recovery. God owns it. He's just using me as a vehicle.
That's powerful.
I'm just a vehicle. This thing right here is going to outlive me, and that's my goal. Mm-hmm. It's like God is using me as a vehicle to lay the foundation for whatever God wants planned later. You know what I'm saying? Not what I want.
Yeah. Not what you want. Not what God wants. That's powerful, man, for you to really accept that call and for you to be a chosen vessel. You know what I mean? When we look back at, you know, in many people's lives, or when we even look back in, you know, rather even the Torah, the gospel, the Bible, we look at a lot of the past stories, how our Creator used people.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? We went through for a purpose. You know what I mean? No matter how small, how big, the things you've been through, a lot of people probably couldn't withstand. How many people have you seen have overdoses? How many people have you seen strung out, still out there on the streets where you tried to get them off? How many people have you seen lives that you've changed? Lives, you mean, where you put your own life at risk, putting people in your car, putting them in your back seat.
Yeah.
But that's where your heart is. That's your calling. That's your mission.
Yeah.
You see what I'm saying?
That's the beautiful thing about the work that I'm doing is or the work that we're doing, you know, because our past is the foundation for somebody, or the blueprint for somebody else's life, the people that's with us on this earth today, and the people to come after us. You know, I always tell people this is a spiritual thing. Soldiers for Recovery, the foundation of it is built on spirituality, whether you're Buddhist, Muslim, Christian, Baptist, atheist, it doesn't matter, because within that prayer, I ask God if it's something that you want me to do. You know what I'm saying? When I got honest, I said, God, if it's something that you want me to do, please can you remove this from me? And this is what he given me to do. This is what he's given me to do. And that's why I say that this is God's. This Soldiers for Recovery is God's. It's not mine.
Wow. So right now, so if anybody wanted to contact your organizations or anything, what would it be? Like, how can they get in contact with this organization?
Well, the easiest way to contact me, like I always tell people, is go right to my Instagram page and hit me a DM. You get me directly from my Instagram page. It's Soldiers for Recovery. Soldiers with an S. And four is F-O-R. It's right on there. You can get me anytime through there if you need any assistance. Secondly, you can email me, which you guys see on the link. And as my good brother mentioned, man, you know, I'll come pick people up off the street, put you in my personal car, and get you where you need to be. I'm also doing, you know, I'm looking for some, you know, donations, some help, because I want to get a vehicle. I want to get a van to help me on my mission. So if you guys would like to be a part of that mission, be a part of Soldiers for Recovery and help giving me a helping hand, that'd be greatly appreciated as well. I'm also a nonprofit 501c3, which means that if it's a large monetary donation, you can also use it as a tax credit.
And what is your Cash App there that they could donate to?
Oh, the Cash App is SULHASSAN 428.
428. We truly appreciate that. And before we go, we know you have that saying that, you know, that one may say, right? Yeah. So this is what we're going to do. We're going to do something special right now, right? If you could say to anybody that's looking down, that's in a recovery house, a prison cell, anywhere across the world, because this thing is all over the world, we want you to do that straight saying and give somebody some quick motivation. What would you say? I know it's tough, but it's all right. It's all right. We just
gonna I got
give,
you.
Just give I it real
you.
Quick.
Uh-huh. I got you. I am Suleyman Hassan, and this is Soldiers for Recovery. And one may say, what is Suleyman Hassan going to speak on today? Don't give up, man. Don't give up. You see, the disease of addiction wants you to give up because the disease of addiction realized that you started connecting with the universe that God made. And the universe that God made has friction in it. So now you're connecting with the creator. And the disease of addiction, it senses that friction. It want to break apart and seven that friction that you are creating with God because it don't want you to win. I don't care where you at today. I don't care where you think you may be going, but you ain't going down that way. You're going to go on the right path. You want to continue to have that friction with God, connect with God, so you can get off these streets, get off the drugs, get off the crime, get off of anything that you face in the day. I know if the good Lord did it for me, I know he can do it for you. If he did it for my good brother, he can do it for you. You got to wake up and realize the connection that you have so you can keep building and coming out of depths of hell, because God is always on your side. I don't care where you at today. Never give up. And by any means necessary today, don't use.
Wow. Powerful, powerful. For those who don't know, that's the brother for Soldiers for Recovery. Yes, Suleyman Hassan. He came, he said it, he did it. He's showing that he's motivating, changing, not just the city, man, but this thing is going to go around the world. You know, you're going to be all over the country with this thing. A lot of people may try to despise the day of small beginnings. But guess what? There's greater coming. There's bigger things coming. It's more than just Philadelphia. It's more than just Jersey, New York, California. This thing is a worldwide thing, man. And we appreciate you coming on here. Like you said, once again, you could donate to the Cash App right there. Right there, that's on the screen. You need to contact them. Soldiers for Recovery, right there on the screen. We appreciate everything you're doing, brother. You constantly keep moving forward. I'm looking forward to connecting with you once again. Like I said, you need me for anything, always reach out. I'm always willing, ready, and able. You know, anything you need, we need me to speak, talk, pass out food. I'm doing outreach, live things as well. But man, I'm telling you, it's been a blessing even having you on here.
Thank you.
I'm telling you. Thank you so much. One more shout out back to One Day at a Time.
Yes, got to shout family out. Yes.
I'm telling you. Mel West.
Odak.
That's it right there. Yeah. You're always a blessing. Doing a powerful work, powerful ministry in the trenches. Things are going on well with them. 215-226-7860.
And make sure y'all follow my page, man.
Yeah. Make sure follow that page. Soldiers for Recovery, the IG, Soldiers for Recovery. Follow his page, y'all. Go there and follow. All right? Without further ado, shout out to GPS once again, transportation.net. We'll be talking more because there may be some connections here concerning vehicles. You know what I'm saying? We'll be seeing here. But 215-774-9913. But until next time, we appreciate you tuning in, staying inside. And we appreciate everything. God bless you. Peace be upon you. And allow everything to transpire the way God and our Almighty.